Welcome, everybody. Good Life Housing Partners. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. We are at the end of this month. It came rather quickly, and we are now just days away from conference week starting with one NMHC, one T21, and a myriad of other conferences that will start in January, at the end of January, and finish sometime in February. And somewhere in there, there's a Super Bowl that Mr. Fogg may attend or may not attend, depending on who's playing. But here we are, folks. We're at the DTLA headquarters. And get us started, Mr. Fogg. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah. Oh, I'm feeling very good. I was going to say this was a good, actually, for a first, really, for me. It's the first weekend where I actually watched a little bit of each of the football games.
Welcome. Welcome to 2024.
It's very interesting. That's that digress on sports too much, but it was interesting.
Oh, I love me some digression.
At the end of the day, the way I looked at it, when I look at it at macro level, it's kind of how I sometimes think in real estate. You know, the higher seeds all won, all advanced.
They did.
But each of them in all their games, at least the first half, some maybe not in the second half, but at least in the first half, looked a little close.
Oh, that's how football sucks you in, especially when you got money on it.
Some of them actually, it was very close till the end, but then some of them, after that first half, then the second half, then it's clearly the higher team was a much better team. So it was so a little fun. Last week was also Davos.
Yes.
Last week in out in Switzerland, the World Economic Forum, which is
just out there in Switzerland, throwing it down.
5-day conference for, I guess, trying to. People who can, they're like captains of industry, I guess, CEOs and, former major, political types, former prime minister of England and other types, foreign ministers from Germany, et cetera.
And so, I actually want to know if Davos has become such, like, I would say it's like one of the more headliner conferences. And it's actually, I don't know what it is required to actually get into the conference, but I think the cost is like 40 grand.
Well, I'm sure it's expensive. It's
40 grand.
It's interesting too, because there's definitely different levels of. I was reading about there's different badges.
Kind of ranked according to
like the color of the badge. Certain color, certain nonprofits and whatever for climate change groups and different people were lamenting about how you're like the assistant badge. Maybe the assistant to the CEO of KKR or Carlisle or someone who was there. Then you get limited access, and then of course, then they're the big stars and big wigs. Stephen Schwartzman from Blackstone, that are there. But it actually sounds like, because it's in Switzerland, it gets obviously very cold there too, and it just seems like from the description, like a tiny town, and if you have all these people descending, it must be just the logistics. I was thinking about it. Obviously, if you're, Stephen Schwartzman's a little different, but we went to attend it. I was thinking about, would I want to attend? I said, well, I'm sure there's some great, geniuses out there and you hear some interesting perspectives, but just the logistics of trying to get around that little town and getting a hotel room.
They were saying
like the hot hotel is like the Holiday Inn, because there's really no national brand hotels. Out there in this little town. Actually, I'm not certain why. It'd be interesting to figure out the history of why it's there. Of all places.
Oh, well, executive producer Jason is right on that.
But in any event, a lot of big thinkers and policymakers and types there. So a couple of takeaways I gleaned from looking at, news articles and different things. So the big topic, no surprise, at this conference, everyone was talking about AI. I guess in past years, it used to be blockchain was the hot topic. But this year is all about AI. How AI will reshape everything. Job losses and which will then, because it's going to replace a lot of jobs, but then at the same time, now we got to retrain people in other jobs and the cost of all that and how that'll, what'll happen. What else can, potential uses for it and the risks, the misinformation, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's here to stay and it's going to keep growing. The other takeaway, ESG, which used to be a hot topic.
Still around?
Well,
no, I'm just kidding.
It's on the back burner. was the theme. It's, while climate change is still important and, this decarbonization, but and there's some financial opportunities in climate transition, but the whole, I guess the SG part of it is not as prominent. The E part is still pretty strong. The economic outlook amongst the people in general was fairly positive. They all feel that the Fed and the other world banks around the world are prepared to cut interest rates. and inflation is largely under control. So overall the outlook was fairly positive, despite, you know, I guess because it's a world forum, you've got, you know, Ukraine war and the Israel-Gaza conflict going on. But then those are that's actually the potential risks or challenges ahead. People a little nervous about if the Israel-Gaza war can spread. And the other big thing people were sensitive to is U.S.-China tensions over Taiwan and if something will happen, leading to a surprise jolt to the economy that hurts the world markets. Interestingly enough, stocks hit another new high. I know we ended the year with a little Fed present that we talked about in a previous podcast, and the S&P 500 set a new high this past Friday. Once again, you know, we started off the year, I think first few weeks in January with a little bit of, you know, not so mediocre inflation news, and so now some of the frothiness went down, but now it's back again.
I think we hit 38,000 this week,
yeah.
Right?
It's a new high, yeah.
38,000. I mean, and what that really, like, when the funny thing about 38,000 is, you know, the next step is 39, and then really it's 40, which is like, you know, yeah, we weren't too long ago where it was 25,000 was an S&P high, right? Like, where that was like a big deal getting to 25, and now we're like quickly to almost 40. Yep.
It's amazing. And a lot of people obviously have done really well in the stock market as a result.
Yes, they have.
The other, and we're also now just a few weeks away from the Lunar New Year.
The Year of the Dragon.
The Year of the Dragon.
Hey, so very auspicious.
People talk about dragon babies. Children born this year, the Year of the Dragon, according to the Chinese folklore, are luckier and more likely to be successful.
I wonder if there is like a study done of Year of the Dragon babies, these dragonettes that eventually. Yeah,
see if it's true.
You could do like a massive study. I'm sure like some, you know, economists has tried it.
That's true. It's interesting because, like you said, the folklore suggests that, and it's interesting. You know, China's undergoing sort of a population crisis, and you know they're just having a lot less new babies, and they lost like 2 million people, I think, 2 million births less from last year, and so the Chinese government is very concerned because China has the largest older adult population in the world. And they're concerned because you don't have sort of this new labor pool. You know, if you don't have babies and new babies are being born, it's going to be more stress on their systems.
And the economies,
Economy and systems. And so they actually are using this Year of the Dragon to try to encourage Chinese people to have babies. And so
goalies.
And so they're actually like giving out money and offering cheaper housing and tax benefits and things.
Oh, wow.
Really, really, in addition to the propaganda, you know, they're also trying to encourage women to not, the little sexist, not to work, but, you know, stick to traditional values and then help raise children and have children so that the country can arise again. So, unfortunately, the statistics show a lot of women today in Chinese society are disillusioned about having kids or even having a second kid. Just because, even though there's a lot of sexual discrimination and there's a lot of laws, even though there are laws to protect women, their view is that the Chinese courts don't really enforce it, especially like in divorce situations. They say a lot of women kind of get stuck, you know, without benefits and things, and so they're saying, what's the benefit really of getting married and having kids? And so it's better to just work and take care of yourself. And so it's,
you know, when we started this podcast, I had no idea you had such a deep knowledge of the plight of women in China. Now I'm looking at you in a very different format, my friend. Like, this is a real development. This is impressive, my friend. Impressive. Yeah. Real glorious dynamo over there in China.
We've talked about the troubles in the Chinese real estate market too. So
yeah, I know.
In general, you know,
I don't think gender equality enters that conversation with that.
Pessimistic economic outlook amongst the young people in China.
And, yes.
And women wanting to, have big families and all that. So it's an issue that China's going to have to address.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, if you look and just like as a more, you know, somebody that's not following it quite as closely as you are, it's interesting that China doesn't really like have to like tries to avoid addressing things. Is that fair? Like it's sort of a culture that doesn't want to address things unless it absolutely has to.
Like, they don't want to, like, it's almost like they don't want to book the flight until they absolutely have to be sure they have to go. Like, it's like kind of a culture of that.
I'm thinking about that.
Like, it's just a culture that's like been forced into this corner. And now you've got to do something.
Well, part of his policies are driven by a small group of people, right? Who make decisions.
Where you would think it'd be easier. Yeah. Like, hey, let's just do this.
Well, if you go back.
Like, hey, zero COVID.
Well, yeah. Or if you think, and then quickly to turn around and say, nah, never mind.
Well, it was quickly. It took a while longer than everyone else.
The one, I guess, the advantage of that is they can turn on a dime quickly and say, okay,
Theoretically, they can't change
the real effects
of it. Yeah, or they're just stuck in their position.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, from on its surface, it's just like building a hospital in 10 days. Like, they can do certain things, because there's certain bureaucratic red tape and things like kind of like the entitlement restrictions and things we have. You know, if the government
decides to pursue a policy. Yeah, yeah.
They'll pursue it. But the problem is, if the policy is wrong, no one wants to complain.
No.
it's top driven.
Yeah, it's very top
driven. It's top driven. And so, just like the one child policy, they look back now, maybe that was a mistake, but take a while before now they finally acknowledge it or
well, actually, you know what, I actually don't think it's so much that they are not willing to address it. They're really not willing to admit mistake.
Yeah,
that's probably a better way of putting it.
True. But at the same time, it's not the issues are much more complicated, so it's not as simple to reverse either. Like, it's just like COVID, right? If they were at the zero COVID policy, then they immediately say, okay, no more, we're done. But the effects of that zero COVID policy, what it's done to supply chain, what it's done to their economy, you can't just reverse it just because, okay, I changed my policy the next day, because they've done so much to pursue that policy. It takes a while to unwind things like that.
Right. But even when it was very obvious that it wasn't working, they just stuck in their position.
That's right. And that's the challenge, right? Because it's top driven. Because, who knows what the top guy really thought, because we're not mind readers of what the president thought. But if the president really believes that, and you're in a country where if you disagree with him, you could go to jail, you're not really going to be fighting him or arguing or debating
or forget about, actually, to some degree, maybe it's not even like who's like vetoing him or like offering some counter viewpoint. Maybe he just doesn't like being wrong.
That's good.
Maybe he just doesn't want to be wrong.
It's true. I mean, real estate is an example, because I was reading about a lot of people thought the government would do more to help the real estate. And they did do some measures towards the end of 2023. But a lot of people who's in an industry have anecdotally told us, like, that's not enough. And now it's showing that it's not enough. So they're trying to figure out what they're trying to, what will they do? And I heard that they're trying to get state-owned enterprises, which are controlled by the government, to basically use balance sheets to help out a lot of companies now. They're trying to come up with a program for that.
Yeah.
But who knows if they'll be able to solve it. San Francisco office vacancy.
We talked about bring it on.
How much they've been struggling. Avis and Young, a new study came out, suggests that they think the office vacancy and the office woes has peaked in San Francisco. And that 24 will be sort of, although it's not much of a reduction, it's they think that vacancy rate will drop by 1%. But they do think it will accelerate significantly in 2025.
Well, I've heard this.
And it's slowly now shifting.
Actually heard this in more detail, that what happens in San Francisco, and it's almost unique to San Francisco, is that there is this very fast deceleration, which creates vacancy, and it's a very quick acceleration. And what happens there that's pretty unique to maybe the world in general is you have basically forget about COVID and all these other things that happen, but in that market, when suddenly companies get funded and they get money and they need to hire staff and they need to take space, it happens quickly. And they start taking the space in big chunks. And it happens very fast. Like, they just start, okay, like, Salesforce built a bloody tower. I mean, if you go back like 20 years.
So you're saying the demand side comes back in.
It comes fast because look at Salesforce. Like, if you go back 20, 30 years, Salesforce was like nothing. And they were like, I'm going to make a billion-dollar company. Now Salesforce makes $1 billion a month, like, or something like that, right? And like, basically they made a whole tower. But at some point, when you get funded and you start growing, your growth needs need office space. Mm-hmm. Now if you mix in like how actually people show up into the office space, it's a different story. I don't know. But I think in the old example, yes, you get funded, you need people, you need space, you just start like just absorbing it, yeah, taking it, yeah, as much as quickly, yeah, as possible. Now with this new model, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, this report, and again, it's just their prediction. The way they analyze that, there's an interesting concept. They talk about what they call shadow vacancy, which is basically, you know, you have leases that are coming due. There's a lot of leases that are about to expire. And, you know, most of the time, like most tenants, is their lease gets closer, you'll either sublet it, or if you're stuck in a longer term lease, you'll go to sublet, or you just let the landlord know, hey, I'm out, and the landlord will give the landlord some time,
right?
And so, but there's a lot of people then who wait till the very end, kind of like what we talked about, right, planning, booking trips, so they wait till the end of the lease maturity, and it's that little group that you don't know. And when they looked at the statistics, they kind of analyzed different things. They said that, you know, in the past 2 years, in 2022, 2023, they think that's sort of the peak of this office vacancy. They said 60% of the space where you're getting close to that final 2 years of maturity, at that time, 60%, no one you didn't know what they were doing. They're part of the shadow vacancy. It was unclear whether they were listing or they were going to stay. He said now it's only 35% of the space that's expiring in the next 2 years.
Gets renewed.
Yeah, 35%, we still don't know what they're doing.
Oh, it's still in flux.
It's still in flux. And so that the fact there's less in flux, you know, these other guys have already listed their space.
Yeah, decided, sublease, they
made,
whatever.
Made
yeah,
their
yeah
decision. They think that, you know, we might be turning a corner. And so they think we peak. And that's kind of their analysis. I don't know if they're right, you know. And then like what you said, if the demand happens, they think that it'll get absorbed. So that's why they think 2024 will be a slowing of the increasing trend of vacancy that we've had for the last few years. But then and then over the next year, 2025, and the next few years, it's going to start to really accelerate. And I think the San Francisco office market will come back. So it's an interesting theory.
I don't know.
So they're pretty bullish about it, but you know, and their main thing is, you know, San Francisco, they rely on the historical views, you know, it's got a highly educated, you know, talent pool living in the communities nearby, you know, school, grid school, because of UC Berkeley and Stanford, and they think great geography because great weather in San Francisco. So.
No, yeah, I mean, listen, you hit on all the points, but in some ways, if you really think about it, what I said was true before a pandemic. It took a pandemic to empty the offices, and I don't know if it takes a recession to fill them back up or what it takes, but it's going to take more than like views and dog parks to get them back in.
Yeah. I mean, there's some green shoots because, you know, AI was kind of like the Salesforce hiring. A lot of these AI startups got a lot of new funding, was trying to hire people. And I was filling in some of this.
Space, but the problem is
not enough yet.
No, but see, the problem with even that, like that argument is when you hire somebody in like the hottest space of tech, it's not like you're like, yo, I'm gonna pay you whatever the number is, $1 million, $800,000, $500,000, whatever the big giant number is, and then I need you to be in the office 4 days a week. It's not like that's part of the deal. Yeah. Part of the deal, in fact, is I'm not going to come to the office, and if you want me to come to the office, I got three other offers, so you tell me what you want me to do. See what I'm saying? Like, that's part of the bargaining chip.
Yeah.
You are actually less attractive if you're like, you got to be.
Now. It's not like the old days where when you've had these office recessions, like, but companies make people come in 5 days a week. I agree.
You're not attractive. The ethos
has changed.
Your appeal is way less. Yeah. If you're like, we need you here. They're like, well, I'm not going to be here. I'd rather just go to some other company.
Exactly.
Like, and so I don't know. Like, that's where this gets really complicated.
So the new appraisal came out. Westfield, since we get downtown San Francisco. We've talked about this, the Westfield Union Square Mall, right in Union Square, in the heart of downtown.
The heart.
They had a new appraisal recently, and it was appraised at $290 million, which is a 75% loss compared to the 2016 valuation of $1.2 billion, according to Morningstar. So they did an appraisal recently for one of the lenders, because I guess the keys were given back to
right
the lender, and I guess they're required to do appraisals and things, and they just conducted the new one. And so... pretty dramatic loss of value there.
Well, they lost like most of the anchor tenants. Yeah, like it's just tenants. It's basically just, you know, office space with higher ceilings. Yeah. At this point. Like,
as we talked about, you know, Nordstrom left is the big anchor. And
then, yeah.
Interesting enough, American Eagle, big retailers, retailers, they're actually suing them for failing to address crime and security issues. They actually have a lawsuit, and they claim in from 2022 to 2023, there were over 100 incidents of crime and security issues that the landlord failed to address at the mall.
And I think that's underreported.
That's probably underreported, yes. I was like, wow, over 100 issues. They actually brought a lawsuit.
No, but I think that's underreported. I think there's probably more than 100.
Yeah.
You'd have to think daily. Well,
You have to figure other tenants too.
Well, American Eagle's suing on their behalf. Yeah. They're not the class action yet. Yeah. They haven't started a WhatsApp thread yet. So.
And then interesting enough, you know, Mayor London Breed has proposed turning this mall now, this 50% occupied mall, into a soccer stadium. They engaged Gensler.
Good old London.
Spending money with Gensler to do a feasibility study.
Why would you need
a soccer stadium?
Yeah, that's amazing. Why would you need a soccer stadium in downtown San Francisco?
But they say, I don't even know if there's a team.
No, there's the San Jose Earthquakes, okay. But they're entrenched over there in San Jose, I think. I don't think they're just like, hey, yeah, that San Francisco area looks great. Why don't we go down there? Like, some of these ideas these folks come up with are just amazing.
So D.C., so San Francisco office space, as we said, is struggling. D.C. has had a similar effect. And it's interesting, the, you know, federal government is one of the biggest tenants. Actually, it's having struggles to get people back to the office. The federal government, only 50% of all the cabinet agencies in Biden administration has been able to get to basically get their people back to hit the goals that they have to be back in the office. And then Fannie Mae, which is sort of a quasi-government, just recently announced they're going to break their lease in 2029, 720,000 square feet. Apparently it was a lease that was signed in 2016 valued at $700 million. which I thought was a big lease.
So that's a big lease.
That's a big And I was thinking that's a big loss too. And, yeah, and I get it. The federal government wants everyone to go back to work, but they themselves can't even get people to go back.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger.
Although, you know, I read this thing today where the market leader in office to residential conversion is Washington, D.C. They've got like 55,000 apartments.
Okay.
Or 55,000 units in some mode of development, construction, planning.
They must have done some stuff to their zoning
code. Yeah, there must be something there. I mean, they probably also just have a lot of office.
Yeah.
In D.C. Like, that seems like a place where everyone's got, like, an office.
But so interesting. So it's not just San Francisco. D.C.'s also got its own issues, and the government itself has got its own issues getting people back to work. Like you said, it's a permanent change.
But it makes me think, like, because we know a handful of people that have bought D.C. office, at least names we know of. And I wonder how many of those folks bought with the idea that they're going to convert to res, or that there's just going to be a lot less office, so they'll just... like lack of supply will allow them to fill up somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of it is conversions, and you got to imagine too, I guess I get it. This longer trend, but at the same time, that is the capital, right? So that's the seat of the federal government. So the federal government can't completely, you know, their biggest employer in that area, they can't completely not have people working in some level of offices.
No.
Cause you need to have a facility for the government.
Right. And some of this is like confidential or whatever you want to call it. Right. So there is a portion of this that's like somewhat sensitive.
The other big news last week to Blackstone, who had bought a big portfolio of loans, commercial real estate loans with Signature Bank. Apparently they're putting it on the market about $1.8 billion.
Of signatures. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Signatures, multifamily loans. And so that, you know, a lot of people think this is good news, actually, that this is going to help with price discovery and help set, or at least start getting more, you know, price discovery and establishment of floor values across the country on apartment buildings. So we'll see what happens and how that prices out. Again, it was a great deal, obviously, for Blackstone again, because they bought this loan portfolio in a JV at the FDIC, and basically FDIC guarantees losses up to a certain amount, and they also provide 50% financing for them to do it.
Yeah, so, I know, it's like a home run deal, basically.
But in terms of the impact it'll have to buyers like ourselves in the apartment market, we'll see if this... I mean, I do feel anecdotally that more and more people have started to call me to talk about deals than at least in 2023. I do feel like there's some more stuff hitting the market.
Yeah, I think there you are seeing some like deals here and there start to resurface, start to become like marketed a little heavier, a little stronger. I don't know how much though. I think I've only seen, you know, deals in markets that are more challenged or in markets that really caught a lot more fire. Yeah, I think those markets that got like almost overheated is where I've seen deals, or I've seen like less desirable asset types like office.
Yeah, or maybe we've been seeing a few more more newer build deals where their capital stack is, you know, they're over leveraged, they've got expensive debt. They need to, you know, get a resolution quicker.
Right. Or I've seen, yeah, exactly. And then they're just trying to, like, Signature's deal. Like, they don't have to sell that 1.8. They're just like, how much can we, like, work with?
Yeah.
Like, what can we get into all of it?
Yeah, I think they're trying to load as much as they can. Book a return.
Book some return or return of capital even. And just say, okay, we're going to focus ourselves on this stack.
Correct. Whatever. Anyway, there's a lot of numbers and things.
Let's do some content. Yes.
So, well, I guess it was last pod. Yeah, going from one extreme to the other. I watched the Golden Globe salt burn.
Yes.
This week was more of a complete opposite direction. I finished off the season 2 of Reacher.
Oh, yes. I'm still watching that. I've lost track of that.
Yeah, the finale is out, so it's good. It's a good ending.
By the way, the size of that man is ridiculous. I don't know if everyone else is just like they've purposely brought in smaller
people. He's a perfect character. Someone told me, I forgot what other movies he's been in.
I don't know what else he's been in, but it's ridiculous that Tom Cruise was a previous Reacher. Well, like, and then you see this like giant person that like can't fit through most doors.
Well, see, I'm glad you point that out because that was when I used to read.
You read the books.
I read books. And the description of the character in the books is actually 6'5", 250.
Oh, it is this fellow.
It's this fellow.
Yeah.
And so, and then the things he does is consistent with what this big fellow does. And so then when the movie came out with Tom Cruise, they zoomed in a little bit, made him look a little bigger. But I was he's definitely not a 6'5", 250 kind of guy.
Yeah, this guy is just like giant. Yeah. Like he may literally be the largest.
Yeah. No, I think he's the perfect actor for it to, you know.
But I didn't read the book. And so I was just like, I vaguely remember this Tom Cruise Reacher character. And I'm like, how do we get to this giant of a human?
Yeah. See, that's sort of the attraction of the book, because it's such a giant creature
who you
obviously think is not smart, doesn't have sort of.
Yeah. It's like a detective. Yeah. It's the Mice and Men type of thing, right?
So I finished that, and then the streaming then automatically went to another movie, and then I just thought, oh, let me watch this. It streamed actually a toy movie. I saw Transformers, Rise of the Beast, which kind of like a Disney Avengers type movie. It's about the robots. But what was fascinating about it was I didn't realize who did all the voices for this movie, and like Pete Davidson was in it.
So he was
one of the robots, and Michelle Yao, who won her Academy Award. I was like, Michelle Yao was in Transformers, and so it's just a very interesting cast. And then, I guess it was a little more diverse instead of the main characters being like Megan Fox and like Shia LaBeouf type guys. It was an African American woman and a Latino guy. Okay. So I was like, oh, it's a
diverse,
different kind of Transformers.
Diversity playing thing going on.
Yeah, okay. So it was interesting. And then the bad guy, and I noticed this because the Amazon Prime had the little, I don't know what you call it, the what's that feature called? Cap. It shows you like whenever a character is speaking, they actually have a little photo of the
person. I forgot
what that feature is called, Opera or something. So whatever it is.
I know what you're talking about.
And though. So the bad guy was one of those characters from that HBO show that everyone used to watch, Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
The little dude.
Oh, so, Peter Dinklage?
Yeah. So I was like,
wow. The little dude, huh? Okay. All right.
There he is. There's our politically correct David. There he is.
I said that guy. I forgot his name.
Second week in a row, you're just touching on these subjects. All right, good for you, buddy.
So I was like, hey. I said, he's in Transformers, too. I said, I didn't know they had this little star-studded international cast.
Yes, little star-studded cast, huh? Okay.
It was funny.
It was kind of a fun movie.
So it was a fun movie. It's kid-friendly, so.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely consider it with our children.
You know, because it was also the Transformers. They also had an animal version of it.
Oh, good.
So the animals were like robots, too, and stuff. So.
I watched Lift, which is like the new Kevin Hart action.
I almost watched that
action thriller deal.
Worth watching?
Yeah, it's fine. He says a few jokes. It's interesting.
But not Ocean's 11 kind of cool.
No, it doesn't have that type of. It doesn't. He's obviously the main character, but his supporting cast. Like the thing about Ocean's 11 is all those other people are funny too. Yeah. But this is like Kevin's pretty funny, but then he can't be like just the only. He needs more than just him.
Okay, so you have the supporting team.
I mean, I don't know enough about movies, but like, yeah, I felt like, you know, I don't know if he just didn't want other people or other people didn't want to be there, but he needed more people. Like it's okay.
Okay,
it's time pass.
Yeah. It didn't look like the typical Kevin Hart kind of movie.
No, it's not. It's a little bit more action driven Kevin Hart, you know, fighting guy, yeah, which okay. I've not seen him in this role
instead
before.
Of just a
doing a bunch of
comedy.
Yeah, doing a bunch of stuff that I'm not used to. Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. The time pass.
Okay. What about upgrades?
Upgrades. Upgrades and meals. Well, I had a very lovely 40th surprise birthday for my brother in law. Well, I didn't have it, but his lovely girlfriend did it and was a It was like a very thoughtful surprise, which I think he was really surprised. And I was like, he's very surprised. And I think he was either going to faint, which he didn't, or he was going to be very surprised, which he was. And then it would lead into like the 7-course tasting meal. And it was very, very like, it was like different parts of the world. And the guy like, you know, was explaining different dishes and it's a lot of fun. And but it was a lot of food. Like it's 7-course, a lot of food for, you know, a group of almost 20 people. But it was fun. It was a really cool evening.
Like
110 odd courses. Yeah. And there's a few dietary things. Wow. But so, I mean, it's a lot of work that goes into like an evening like that. And when you're doing 7-course, you really see it kind of like play out.
Yeah. That's a lot of planning too.
A lot of planning. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of balloons. It was very, 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 very well done. Very thoughtful. Very thoughtful. I mean, this guy, he's going to have to really step up his game for her birthday. Yeah. Disney ain't going to work. but that was a cool meal, and it was a cool event. It was really fun.
Oh, good. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call it necessarily an upgrade, although it was an interesting dining experience. I went to Dave and Buster's.
at the mall. Your children aren't really of that age.
Yes,
anymore.
Yes. So I didn't go with my children. I've never been to Dave and Buster's. I've seen Dave and Buster's on Rent Rolls before, but I never, you know, I assumed it was like, I've been to Chuck E. Cheese as our kids were younger when they were going to birthday parties. So I was curious, what is with Dave and Buster's? And so I guess it has alcohol, so it's more for adults too.
Yeah.
But it's full of the arcade games. And I went with a friend who, as you know, he's exploring a business idea with the claw machine.
The claw machine, yes.
And so he had been talking to one of the biggest manufacturers of claw machines, and he had asked them, "Where can I see your machines?" And he talked about the different types, and the manufacturer had pointed out, "Well, we're at Dave and Buster's, at all Dave and Buster's," and he listed a place nearby in Arcadia in this mall that had one. And so we asked me if let's go do some research and we can go eat there and get a beer. And so I went to Dave and Buster's, and chicken wings were actually pretty good at Dave and Buster's.
Oh yeah. The food I remember food is actually vaguely pretty good.
Okay. But we saw the claw, but we also, I haven't been in Dave and Buster's. They have a ton of arcade games.
Oh, they've got tons.
And a lot of it actually.
A lot of fancy arcade games.
Yeah. Fancy high end. And a lot of it, like there was this super huge Halo game and, you know, shooting games and stuff. And they also had games from back from the 80s, 90s when I was a kid. So I brought back some memories of big, you know, Galaxy or Asteroid games and stuff. And I was like, oh.
There we go.
I was almost tempted to play. Well,
I know which day. I've been by that Dave & Buster's because I've gone to kids' parties at the little playroom thing they have next door.
That's the other fascinating thing that they had these other playrooms.
Which they, by the way, they have the claw situation in there. It's very popular. Very popular over in that thing. In fact, I think the claw, because it's one of the few arcades and games in there, gets a lot of action in that place. More so than I would say the Dave and Buster's. But I've seen the Dave and Buster's, and it's, you know, I don't know when you probably went during the day.
No, I went at night.
What night did you go?
Friday night, actually.
Oh, you went Friday night.
Well, that was the other thing that I was surprised. They actually had another, I didn't go to this other area, but they had an area roped off that was sort of for, in addition to private party rooms, they also had like an upstairs sky balcony or whatever patio
because
also they announced the patio is open.
Like bottle service situation. No,
I don't think it's bottle service, but you can get alcohol up there.
So I know you can. It's very Dave and Buster's because in LA you don't have a lot of these concepts. There's only a couple Chuck E. Cheese's, Shakey's kind of fills that void because they've kind of been like grandfathered in.
For the little boy.
And but Dave and Buster's, I think the one you went to is like the closest thing to like proper LA.
Yeah, that's true.
And then that I know of at least. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like Lucky, you know, Lucky.
Yeah, because I don't think there is like a Dave and Buster's. Like, no. And it's next to like a Lucky Strike type place too.
Yes, and it's next to this bouncing.
And this bouncing. That's the one.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. So
it's funny. I mean, it's a very funny, unique concept.
So I guess sort of an upgraded experience.
Yeah. I didn't know you've never been. That's funny. All right, folks, that does it for us. Upgrades, fun times. We'll have a lot to report after our conferences next week. Anything we're missing?
No, I think that's
Thank you, executive producer Jason Fong. Thank you, co-executive producer Braham out there. And let's get this one published. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Be well.